Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, the Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. This program is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical, folk, jazz, blues, rock, country, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Today's musical trivia questions come to us from The Atlantic and StageMusicCenter.com. Question number one. Where was the musical instrument, the accordion, invented? Was that A, China, B, Germany, C, England, D, Africa, or E, Mexico? So where was the accordion invented anyway? And question number two. Where was the musical instrument, the ukulele, invented? Was that A, Hawaii, B, Portugal, C, India, D, Argentina, or E, Russia? The ukulele, where did it come from anyway? The answers to these two important trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from the website onthisday.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of August 26th. Well, it was on this very day, back in 1889, that Charles G. Conn, C-O-N-N, received a patent for the metal clarinet. With its flamboyant high notes and sonorous low notes, the metal clarinet enjoyed a brief period of popularity in the 1900s. Charles Gerard Conn was an entrepreneur, band instrument manufacturer, newspaper publisher, and U.S. representative from Indiana. His metal clarinet was patented on this day back in 1889. And it was 59 years ago today, 1963, that Peter, Paul, and Mary performed Blowin' in the Wind before civil rights marchers who had gathered in Washington, D.C. to hear Martin Luther King Jr. speak. 1963, today. Neil Young's Beautiful Bluebird introduces our country and folk music news. It's entitled, Bruce Willis Plays Hopeful Note During Harmonica Jam Session Amid Health Battle. His talent is speaking for itself, says Emma Hemming Willis. Published in Entertainment Weekly by Justine Browning on the 16th of August, 2022. Bruce Willis is learning on his love and leaning on that love of music following his aphasia diagnosis. The actor showed off his harmonica skills as part of a jam session with his friend Derek Richard Thomas, who sang a song while playing the guitar. The diehard star's wife, Emma Hemming Willis, shared a video of the soulful collaboration on Instagram. A hopeful note for the 67-year-old. Their talent is speaking for itself. Willis's love for music is well documented. He released his debut record, The Return of Bruno, in 1987 under his alter ego, Bruno Randolini. Later, he released If It Don't Kill You, Just Makes You Stronger, and classic Bruce Willis. The star's divisive but fascinating 1991 action flop, Hudson Hawk, doubled as a musical showcase for him. The footage comes after Willis was forced to retire from acting in March after being diagnosed with aphasia, a cognitive condition that affects a person's ability to communicate. This is a really challenging time for our family, and we are so appreciative of your continued love, compassion, and support, his family said in a joint statement. We are moving through this as a strong family unit and wanted to bring his fans in because we know how much he means to you and as you do to him, the statement continued. Last month, Hemmings shared a playful clip of Willis returning to the famed Fox Plaza building featured in Die Hard for the 34th anniversary of the film. In a video shared to Instagram, she interspersed clips of her husband from the film as music plays in the background. I come flying back to you. St. Saen's Carnival of Animals introduces our classical music news. It's entitled 10 Best Pieces of Classical Music for Children, published in ClassicFM.com on December the 1st, 2020. From Tchaikovsky's Magical Ballets to Bizet's Barnstorming Orchestral Preludes, some of the greatest classical pieces make perfect music for toddlers. Here's our selection of the greatest pieces of classical music for children. Coming in at number one, St. Saen's Carnival of the Animals. St. Saen's grand zoological fantasy is a beautiful, funny, and clever all at once. The Swan, one of the most iconic movements, is scored for two pianos and a cello solo, with a calming cello tune representing the bird's effortless gliding, while the rolling piano chords paint a musical picture of the swan's hidden feet, paddling furiously under the water. Here's our selection of the greatest piece of classical music for children. Each of the piece's 14 movements represents a different animal, including a lion, donkey, and elephant, as well as fossils, an aquarium, an aviary, and St. Saen's little joke, pianist, possibly the most dangerous animal of them all. Dave Porter's theme song to Breaking Bad introduces our jazz, blues, and soundtrack music news. Ever wonder about the music behind the films? Well, meet the composer behind the eerie Breaking Bad theme. This is written by John Jurgensen and published in the Wall Street Journal on the 24th of September, 2013. Last Sunday, in the penultimate episode of Breaking Bad, the familiar theme music to the Emmy-winning drama played in the show itself for the first time. The eerie slide guitar riff that defines the show's opening sequences propelled the episode's final moments, in which Walter White makes the fateful decision to leave his hiding place in New Hampshire and return to New Mexico. Dave Porter created that opening theme and has scored the show throughout its five-year run, a composer who began his career as an assistant in the studio of Philip Glass. What was your original intent when composing the theme for the show's pilot? When I wrote it 6 years ago, I was trying to come up with a thematic statement that encompassed the show. Even serious creator Vince Gilligan would admit that he didn't know that much about where the story was going to go. He did know that the backbone was Walter White's descent and devolution from being a milquetoast, run-of-the-mill guy to being a very hardened and darkly driven character. I wanted to give a glimpse of that destination, which the viewer would hear every time they watched the show. In the first season, the theme may have seemed a little darker and bolder than the show actually was, but the point was to have that little taste of where the show was going. Fast forward 6 years, and we're close to the end. I've been biding my time looking for a moment where I could introduce the theme into the story itself. Why did the second-to-last episode seem like the right one to use the theme? Well, this is my own personal interpretation. I viewed this moment as the one where we realize that the transformation in Walter's character is complete. The two halves that we witness so much, the milquetoast and the Heisenberg guy, have melded into one. Peter Gold, who wrote and directed this episode, has said that this was the episode where all the major characters reached their absolute bottom. In that moment, Walt has just had a confrontational discussion with his son, and he feels like his entire journey has been for naught. He calls the DEA and has basically given himself up until he sits down at the bar and sees his old colleagues on the Charlie Rose show and realizes there's more that he wants to say. My hope is that the theme helps drive the understanding of Walter's push to finish the story, however it may conclude. The article skips down and ends with this. What's it like to have a piece of your music become woven into the culture? Well, to be honest, I'm not sure I've wrapped my head around it. I wrote it with the best of intentions for a show that I knew was great, but I had no idea that it would survive, much less become this social thing that it's become. To me, the power of the theme song is really a testament to the show itself. The music went along for the ride. I've been sent a lot of YouTube clips over the years from young kids playing the theme in their basement to elaborately filmed spoofs of the show to dubstep remixes. I've heard about the dance sequence they did at the Emmys the other night, but I haven't seen it yet. I love that stuff. What would viewers be listening for in the final episode? I have to be careful. Sometimes in the most intense moments, the most powerful use of music was not to have any music, to leave the action or emotion as raw as possible. And so that might be the case at times during the finale. So who is Dave Porter anyway? We introduce the answer to this question with one of the composer's earliest recordings, a cover he arranged and performed of the Beatles' In My Life.
Places I remember all my life, though some have changed, some forever, none for better, some have gone, and some remain. All these places have their moments, with lovers and friends, I still can. Some are dead and some.
As noted in a recently published IMDb biography of Dave Porter, Dave Porter is a Los Angeles-based composer for film and television. He began his classical music training at the piano at age 5, but it was his interest in electronic music as a teen that led him to start composing his own music. He studied both classical and electronic music composition at Sarah Lawrence College under John Ganelli and started his professional career as an assistant in Philip Glass's recording studio in New York City. Dave is perhaps best known for his enduring creative relationship with one of Hollywood's most respected figures, Vince Gilligan. Since the remarkable plot episode of Breaking Bad in 2007, Dave has written the original music for all of Gilligan's projects. He scored all 62 episodes of that groundbreaking series and created its iconic opening theme. Actor Bryan Cranston stated, "With his music, Dave Porter has created another character for Breaking Bad." Evocative and meaningful, Dave's work is an essential part of the storytelling. Since then, Dave has also been behind all of the original music for Better Call Saul, Gilligan's feature film El Camino, James Spader's The Blacklist, and Seth Rogen's Preacher. Dave has won ASCAP's Composer's Choice Award for Best Television Composer in 2013 and 2017.
I've loved you more. Old friends, winter companions, the old men, lost in their overcoats, waiting for the sunset. The sounds of the city sifting through trees settle like dust on the shoulders of the old friends.
Simon and Garfunkel's Old Friends introduces our rock and pop music news. It's titled, Paul Simon Helps with Old Friends While Working on New LP. This is written by Jonathan Cohen, August 19, 2022, in Spin magazine. Paul Simon has been working on an album of new material at New York's Reservoir Studios, but that's not the only music he lent a hand with there this week. According to a Facebook post from cabaret singer Barbara Fasano, Simon, 80, guided her on a rendition of Simon and Garfunkel's Old Friends that was already in progress before she realized the rock legend was rolling tape in the same building. "We had laid down 4 tracks and were about to record Old Friends, so how could I resist?" wrote Fasano, a regular at New York jazz clubs such as Birdland. "I introduced myself and said I was sorry to interrupt, but we were actually about to record his song. His face lit up and he was on his feet, walking into our studio. Paul Simon pulled out his guitar and coached us on voicings and instrumentation. In a crazy, surreal moment, he began to play Old Friends on the same guitar he's been playing on his solo records for 50 years, while I sang along. He stayed with us for nearly an hour." Simon's new album is provisionally titled The Seven Psalms, the inspiration for which apparently came to him in a dream, according to his conversations with Malcolm Gladwell as part of the Miracle and Wonder audiobook series. It will be Simon's first album of new material since 2016's Stranger to Stranger. Simon retired from touring in 2018, but continues to make occasional live appearances, including his first performance at the Newport Folk Festival last month in Newport, Rhode Island.
I have a photograph, preserve your memories, they're all that's left you.
So how'd you do on today's trivia questions? Well, the answer to our first question, where was the musical instrument, the accordion, invented? Was it A, China, B, Germany, C, England, D, Africa, or E, Mexico? Correct answer? Answer B, Germany. As noted in a September 25, 2020 article by Kamran Ahmad in StageMusicCenter.com, the accordion was invented in Germany in 1822. Since then, the instrument has made a significant impact on the world of modern and classical music. The accordion is similar to a portable piano. It is a wind instrument comprising two reed organs that are connected by folding bellows. Like the piano, the accordion hosts a keyboard to frame the melodies of the tunes. The sounds are produced by compressing and expanding the bellows. The accordion is widely recognized across many countries and cultures due to its historical inclusion into a wide variety of music styles. The instrument was first created in the early 19th century in the city of Berlin, Germany. Friedrich Buschmann, the inventor, initially coined its name as Handelin. The name that the instrument started with insinuates the many changes and evolutions that it underwent over time. In Germany, the instrument was referred to as Akkordeon, owing to its derivation from the German word Akkord, that's spelled A-K-K-O-R-D, by the way, that translates to chord. The accordion was introduced to the rest of the world during the mass migration from Europe to other countries, including North America, in the 1800s. The impact of globalization on the instrument is evident from the various terms and names people use to refer to the different parts of the world. The Philharmonica in Italy, the Bayan in Russia, the Sanfenchin in China, the Harmonium in Pakistan, and the Trekspiel in Norway. Over time, people from various cultures and countries came to terms with a common name for the instrument, the accordion. Today, the accordion is an integral part of the most musical cultures worldwide and one of the major instruments in many different music genres, including the European polka, the Latino polka from Mexico, the Argentinian tango, and the American Cajun zydeco. Some of the most renowned music composers of the 19th and 20th centuries, such as Dmitri Shostakovich, Alban Berg, and Roy Harris, have done many major compositional works based on the accordion. Apart from a few pieces and parts, which are all machine-made, most of the accordion's components require exquisite artisanship for their creation. It is for this reason that some accordion models fetch eye-watering prices in auctions and online marketplaces. And the answer to our second question, where was the musical instrument, the ukulele, invented? Was that A, Hawaii, B, Portugal, C, India, D, Argentina, or E, Russia? Correct answer? Answer B, Portugal. As noted in an article titled The Rise and Fall and Rise of the Ukulele, published in The Atlantic magazine on 2/25/15 by Marion Jacobson, the ukulele has gone from being an exotic new trend to the embodiment of quiche since it arrived on Hawaii 125 years ago, but is currently enjoying a revival. When Eddie Vedder, Impulse, brought one on a trip to Hawaii, he was compelled to record a whole album of ukulele songs. It won a Grammy, of course. Despite a long history that once included a reputation as an exotic and highbrow instrument, the ukulele has also endured decades of snubbing from both the pop music scene and the more cultured world of classical music. But it's making a strong comeback that can be traced in large part to the instrument's accessibility, affordability, YouTube popularity, and celebrity esteem. The instrument, with its four plastic strings and a short neck, originated in Europe and was introduced to Hawaii in 1879 when a Portuguese immigrant named João Fernandes jumped off the boat and started strumming and singing. The crowd of Hawaiians were so impressed that they called the instrument ukulele, which translates to jumping flea. The Great Depression provided another gateway to the ukulele. As prices of pianos, accordions, and other pricey instruments soared, saving and scrimping Americans helped boost the ukulele to peak popularity in the 1930s. Indeed, bluegrass music took off during that period as well, and the ukulele is still strongly associated with the string band phenomena. Television offered a golden opportunity for the instrument. In 1950, the popular television host Arthur Godfrey, sporting a Hawaiian shirt, actually gave lessons to millions of viewers right in their living rooms. Unexpected was the YouTube-driven stardom of 20-year-old Hawaiian artist Jake Chimabukuro, who posted a video of himself playing elaborate introspective variations on George Harrison's While My Guitar Gently Weeps on a ukulele. The ukulele has always fascinated me because it doesn't intimidate other people, says Chimabukuro. We yearn for a gig in which people simply play the music, he said, and the ukulele is open to all. The audience goes home and thinks, I could do that. So let's close out today's program with Jake Chimabukuro's Over the Rainbow. Time for today's episode of Music Review. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. This program is also available as a podcast after the broadcast in our website, ncreadingservice.org. As we leave you now, remember these words: kindness is a language which blind people see and deaf people hear. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. If you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me at 919-832-5138. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning, please call 919-779-1755. So long, until next time.